Good morning.
Good morning.
Whoa, is that loud? Got everyone's attention, right? How's everyone doing?
Good.
Good. I'm doing very well. Thanks. So I wanted to talk a little bit today about overcoming adversity. It's a topic that I've been thinking about a fair amount over the past week since Steve asked me to get up here today and talk about it. So I thought I'd start with a little story and then something that you guys, I think, can relate to or have heard about. So Todd Beamer, he was born in November 1968, Flint, Michigan, to David Beamer, an IBM sales representative, Peggy Beamer, the middle child of three and only son. Beamer and his two sisters, Melissa and Michelle, were raised with a strong biblical value system and work ethic. Beamer went to college at Fresno State University, where he majored in physical therapy, played baseball in the hopes of playing professionally, but injuries he suffered in an automobile accident ended these plans. He returned home to Illinois, transferred to Wheaton College, where he met his wife, Lisa, during a senior seminar class. Their first date was November 2nd, 1991. A date whose 10-year anniversary they had been planning to celebrate at the time of his death. After graduating, Beamer married his wife. They moved to Plainsboro, New Jersey, where Beamer began working with Oracle. Beamer's work forced him to travel up to four times a month, sometimes for as long as a week. In 2011, he'd earned a five-day trip to Italy with his wife for being a top sales performer. They returned home on Monday, September 10th at 5 p.m. While Beamer could have left that night for a Tuesday business meeting in California, he opted instead to spend time with his family. His wife was due the following January with their third child. He left at 6:15 a.m. the next morning to take an early flight from Newark to San Francisco to meet with representatives of Sony. At 1 o'clock, he was planning to return on a red-eye flight that night. And you all know what happened to United Flight 93, which was scheduled to depart Newark at 8 a.m. It was delayed 42 minutes. 6 minutes after it departed, American Airlines Flight 11 crashed into the World Trade Center's North Tower 15 minutes later at 9:03. As United Flight 175 crashed into the South Tower, United Flight 93, which Todd was on, was climbing to a cruising altitude, heading west over New Jersey and into Pennsylvania. Moments later, the plane was hijacked, led by Lebanese Zayed Samir Jarrah, who took over the plane's controls, disengaged the autopilot, and told passengers, "Remain sitting. We have a bomb on board." Beamer and the other passengers were herded to the back of the plane. The curtain between first class and second class had been drawn, at which point Beamer saw the pilot and co-pilot lying dead on the floor just outside the curtain. Within 6 minutes, the plane changed course and was heading for Washington, D.C. Several of the passengers made phone calls to loved ones who informed them about the two planes that had crashed into the Trade Center and the third into the Pentagon. Beamer tried to place a credit card call through a phone located on the back of a plane seat, but was routed to a customer service representative who passed him on to a GTE Airphone supervisor, Lisa Jefferson. With FBI agents listening in on their call, Beamer informed Jefferson the hijackers had taken over the flight. One passenger had been killed. He mentioned the dead pilots, stated that the hijackers had knives. One appeared to have a bomb strapped around his waist. When the hijackers veered the plane sharply south, as he was speaking, he briefly panicked, exclaiming, "We're going down." Following this, the passengers and the flight crew decided to act. According to accounts of cell phone conversations, Beamer, along with several others, including Tom Burnett, in discussing their options and voting on a course of action, they ultimately decided to storm the cockpit and take over the plane. Beamer told Jefferson that the group was planning to jump on the hijackers and fly the plane into the ground before their plan could be followed through. Beamer recited the Lord's Prayer and the 23rd Psalm with Jefferson, prompting others to join in. "The Lord is my shepherd," he requested of Jefferson. "If I don't make it, please call my family, let them know how much I love them, After this, Jefferson heard muffled voices and Beamer clearly answering, "Are you ready?" "Okay. Let's roll." These were Beamer's last words to Jefferson. Tom Burnett, another passenger on the plane, made several phone calls to his wife. Beginning at 9:30, he explained the plane had been hijacked. He also said one passenger had been stabbed with a knife. During one of Tom Burnett's calls, his wife informed him of the attacks on the World Trade Center, and he replied, "They're talking about crashing this plane. Oh my gosh, it's a suicide mission." He began pumping her for information about the attacks, interrupting her from time to time to tell the others nearby what she was saying. Then he hung up. He ended his last call by saying, "Don't worry, we're going to do something. So let's roll. Don't worry, we're going to do something." We all know that story or parts of it. And I don't know about you, but I've often wondered over the years if I'd been on that plane that day, how I would have responded in that situation. Very little time to react. It's do or die, probably die either way. What would I have done? How would I have dealt with that? And I honestly don't know the answer. I don't really know what my response would have been. But what I do know is that these two men, Todd Beamer, Tom Burnett, when facing a situation, I don't think we can even comprehend it. They decided to do something. They didn't shirk back. They didn't dive under the seat. They gathered the other passengers on the plane. They weighed both sides. And they did all of this over the course of about 10 minutes. They had about 10 minutes to make a decision as to what they were going to do. Were they scared? Of course they were. Fear? There's no way they weren't scared. They weren't fearful of what was going on. But when the chips were down, they stared at their fear and they overcame it. It's a moving story. But the question I guess I want us to think about today is, how do we deal with the day-to-day adversity, sort of the things that come at us day in, day out? We're not necessarily dealing with life or death situations very often. Hopefully not ever. You never know, though. But how are we dealing with the things that come at us every single day? And not just deal with them, but triumph over them. How do we take some of our biggest fears and overcome them? See, I think we as men, I think we face hard things every single day. I think there isn't a day that goes by where we're not facing something that's difficult. Life's hard. I think life's hard. Life throws us curveballs. Some are in our control, but many are not in our control. And that's why they're called curveballs. They're coming at us. We don't know about them. We don't know what's coming. And the only thing that we can do is control our response. And I think the question that we have to ask ourselves is, when things come at us, I mean, are we going to stand tall? Are we going to stand up? Or are we going to quit? And again, I'm not just talking about the big things. The big things are important. We lose our jobs. We don't have enough money. Our marriage isn't going well, whatever the case may be. I'm talking about the little stuff. We all have to deal with stuff. We're all dealing with stuff all the time. And I think if we deal with the small stuff well, if we deal with those things well, I think it's like building muscle memory. I think we do the good things well, the little things well, and when the big things come our way, I think we deal with those things well as well, by God's grace. So how do we do that? Four things that I was sort of thinking about. First, I think we are men of integrity. To be a man of courage, you need to be a man of integrity. Second, we need to be men who are decisive. We need to be able to make decisions. Third, and this one's a hard one, we need to be men who give others credit. And I'll talk a little bit about that. And fourth, we need to be men who seek feedback, who ask for feedback on the back end. So first, men of integrity. How can we be men who stand up for what's right, handle things the right way, the day in, day out, standing up for what's right? First off, I think it's what's saying what needs to be said. Just saying what needs to be said, even in tough situations. I don't think we as a society are necessarily very good at communicating hard things very well. We're not very good at it. And there's a lot of reasons for that. And I think what it really comes down to is fear. We have bosses that are shredding people in meetings. We have coworkers that are throwing tantrums. We have things going on all around us. I think I don't know about you guys, I deal with this stuff all the time at work. And I think being a man of integrity, being a man of courage, is being able to step up and speak truth into hard situations, which isn't always an easy thing to do. When I think of a man who spoke truth, I think of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, FDR, and his fireside chats. And many of you probably know about these, but during his presidency, he wasn't pregnant. Holy cow. Okay. He gave 30 radio addresses between 1933 and 1944. And it was the first time in history that a president had communicated directly with a large number of citizens. Roosevelt spoke with familiarity to millions of Americans about the promulgation of the Emergency Banking Act in response to the banking crisis, the recession, New Deal initiatives, and of course, World War II. On radio, he was able to quell rumors and explain his policies comprehensively. His tone and demeanor communicated self-assurance during times of despair and uncertainty. Roosevelt was one of radio's greatest communicators, and the fireside chats kept him in high public regard throughout his presidency. So what was the number one reason that his fireside chats were so successful? Sure, he was calm. He was the president of the United States, self-assured. But I think the number one reason that he was so successful is that he spoke truth. Things got bad during the war. There was a lot of hard things they were dealing with. And he said what needed to be said, and he was saying them to the American people. He wasn't pulling punches. He was telling them what they needed to hear. So men of integrity, communicating truth, standing up for what's right, saying what needs to be said, even if it's hard. And when we communicate hard messages, it certainly isn't a one-size-fits-all. And you need to know sort of your audience. And thankfully, I think I've matured a little bit over the years, but I used to just... I didn't really care who I was saying it to. I would just say it. It would come out, and usually it would come out wrong. Either that was one extreme, or the other side was I wouldn't say anything, and I would just sort of hide for cover under the table and hope that the whole thing blew over. Why did I do that? It was because it was safe. It was the safe thing to do, was to hide. And is that how I should have responded? No. I should have been standing up for what was right. I should have been doing the right thing. Sometimes it comes at personal cost, but I think others will thank us. See, if we're feeling whatever that thing is that we should be speaking about, we know that others probably are feeling it as well. So saying it, speaking truth, and saying it humbly, I don't know everything, saying it objectively, and being able to say when you don't know the answer, I think that that's a hard one as well. I think that it's nice to have a solution when we are speaking with speaking truth. But I think it's also fair to say that none of us know everything, and we're not always going to have all the answers. We're not always going to have whatever the solution is. And so I think being able to say it and say it, I think what really builds credibility, and shows that you're a man of your word is really three words. I don't know. I don't necessarily know the answer, but I know we need to do something differently. Here's what we need to do. Using a lot of we statements, not necessarily an I statement, but here's what I think we need to do differently. Here's what I see as needing to change. I just started a new job, as Steve mentioned, a few weeks ago. And I've made it pretty clear to people in my new role that I don't know very much. I mean, it's easier to go, and it's easy for me because it's new. And so I'm sort of in the honeymoon period a little bit. But I think being able to go into a situation and just say, you know best, you've been doing this for a long time, help me understand. Going into meetings, coming out of those meetings and pulling people aside and saying, what was that all about? What did, I don't know the answer. I think being able to say that we don't know really shows that we're men of integrity. So men of courage, men of integrity, saying what needs to be said, saying it tactfully, saying it with humility, and admitting when you don't know it all. I think that that's key. Second, a courageous man is decisive. Todd Beamer, Tom Burnett, you think they were decisive? They had 10 minutes. They had 10 minutes to make a decision. And what did they do in those 10 minutes? First, they quickly sized up the situation. They assessed it very quickly. They figured out Tom was on the phone with his wife. He told him there were other planes going into the World Trade Center. Todd was hearing the same thing. So they quickly realized that their plane was part of the plot. So they went through an assessment under extreme pressure, all sorts of pressure, and they made a quick assessment. Second, they made an initial decision. We need to move. We need to storm the cockpit. That's what we think we need to do. And then what they do, and I really like this, I don't know if you heard it when I was going through it, but they built consensus. So there's 25 people in the back of the plane, and they actually took a vote. They voted. And I think part of the reason that they did it was they wanted to make sure everyone was on board. They knew that they were going to need just about everyone to carry out their plan. And fourth, once they'd made a decision, they moved. They didn't look back. They didn't second guess. They moved. They moved forward. See, I think sometimes, I know I do this sometimes, we fall into sort of a analysis paralysis, right? So again, I've been in my new position for a short period of time, and I'm already seeing this where I've been in a couple meetings, and we're trying to make a decision, or the group's trying to make a decision about something, and they've been trying to decide for 7 months. Like, they started the conversation like back in November, and I'm sitting there going, so, and I don't really know. I don't know. You know, I say, I don't know. And so after like the second, I pull one of the guys aside and I just said, it seems like somebody just needs to make a decision. Like, if it's been 7 months, it can't be that important to begin with. Just make a decision. Somebody, like, why are we wasting our time with this? So I think being decisive, and I think our wives look for us often, to make decisions. My wife looks at me all the time, you know, what do you think I should do? The other night she was heading down to Stanford for work the next morning. And, you know, she looks at me and she goes, honey, do you think I should leave at 5 a.m. or 8 a.m.? And I'm like, and I kind of looked at her like, well, I know you're not getting up at 5 a.m. So, but she was like, it was a real question. And so I said, I think you should leave at 8 a.m. She's like, okay, I think that's what I should do too. So our wives, they're looking for us to make decisions. They may not always act like it, but they do. So, and I think it's nice when, to have facts, right? When you're making a decision, but we need to realize, and I think this is key, that we don't always have all the facts. We can't weigh every single pro and con about a decision. I mean, sometimes it's really, a lot of times, I think, it's really trusting your instinct, just trusting your gut. It's intuition. I think going into a decision, oftentimes I think we know what the right answer is generally before having all the facts. And I think it's important to have the facts. I think it's important, especially if you're trying to sell the idea on the back end to an egotistical boss or whatever the case may be. It's good to have the facts, but I think trusting ourselves, trusting our gut, I think that's important. So courageous men are decisive. They get the facts, but more importantly, I think it's trusting. It's trusting your gut, trusting your intuition. Third, courageous men give others the credit. I think this one's really hard. And, I think it takes a lot of courage. You mean I can't take credit for something? This wasn't my idea. I grew up in a place in a firm where it was all about toot your own horn. Like, you're supposed to toot your own horn all the time. Like, that was sort of, it was this catchphrase. Like, you need to, Luke's looking at me like, what does that mean? So making it clear that you're the one sort of that's, you know, behind the, whatever it was, you know, making sure that other people know everything that you're doing. And I don't think that that's necessarily all bad. Like, I think we should let people know what we have going on, but, the society is all about sort of selling yourself, right? Tooting your own horn. And I think about, a manager that he worked for me, at Deloitte, and we had a sort of a get together a few weeks ago. It was a going away, for me actually. And people were sort of standing up and saying stuff, and And I just felt like, and I knew I was going to do this, but I turned it right back around at the end and just said, you know what? The reason you guys are saying this stuff is because of this guy. I had a guy that worked for me, honestly, that probably taught me more about leadership and just how to lead. And he worked for me, but he taught me more about it than probably anybody that I've ever worked with. And the reason I think that he was as successful as he was because he was so quick to give other people credit. And it took me a long time to sort of figure this out, but he would send people into my office, people that worked with him all the time, and they would, you know, come in and they'd present an idea or whatever it was. And sometimes he'd come with them, but sometimes he'd just let them do it. And I knew, I mean, he was very collaborative. I mean, he was always talking to these guys. I knew that he was behind it. I mean, I knew he was behind a lot of it, but he really did a great job of building up his team by giving other people credit. And I will say that group of people that I had, it was probably for a 5-year period. That was probably the most successful team that we've had. We were a high functioning, high performing team. And it was because this guy was quick to give other people, credit. And I actually think when we do this, we're actually likely, not always, but we can benefit from it, right? So I had a great team. I had a high performing team, and that leads to, for everybody on the team, that can be a bigger raise. That can be a bigger, whatever it is. And so I think giving, and if it's, and like, you know, I knew that he was doing this. And so again, if you're giving other people credit and your bosses or whoever you're, you know, reporting to is, if they're worth anything, I mean, they should know. I mean, they should know. And if they don't, then I mean, I think so be it. I mean, that's, you know, that's fine. But I think being a man of courage, is giving other people credit. And finally, I think, that courageous men seek feedback on the back end. So, you know, how did that go? I mean, I think the only way we're going to improve is, you know, ask others. When I made that decision, you know, what could I have done differently? What could I have done better? Again, that's a hard thing to do, to ask others, ask people that work for you. Ask your wives for feedback. They're probably going to give it to you anyway. a lot of times unsolicited. So solicit it. So it doesn't always come unsolicited. A couple weeks ago, my wife and I were out to dinner, and I sort of knew the answer before I asked, but I think it was a good thing I did. But, you know, I'd been at my new job again for a few weeks. So I was just, I knew I was a little bit distracted. It's the springtime, and in our house in the spring, there just tends to be a lot more going on. We have kids activities. We've got, sports. It's end of the school year. There's just end of the school year stuff we're dealing with. We have a babysitter that we've had for 5 years, watch our kids like 2 days a week. And, Meredith works, my wife works. And so she stays with the kids after school, and, she just decided to move to Florida. So we're scrambling, trying to figure out what we're going to do. And we're interviewing people. And I mean, so there's a fair amount going on. So, I asked her, I said, you know, honey, how do you think I'm doing as, you know, how do you think I'm doing as a husband? And, she was pretty blunt in her response, but I think it was, again, I sort of knew, but I think it was the right thing for me to ask. And I think it was the right thing to hear, because it very quickly just made me go, okay, you know, all of this other stuff, I mean, it's important. It's stuff that we have to deal with. But at the end of the day, there's really a couple of things that are really important, right? And one is my faith, and the other one is my family. And in my family, it's my wife. And, so I better be loving her. I better be nourishing her. I better be asking her how things are going for her and meaning it. At any rate, I think asking for feedback, how am I doing? How did I handle that? Men of courage, proactively seek, feedback. So, overcoming adversity, doing it with integrity, being decisive, giving others credit, and lastly, seeking feedback. And I can't think of a greater example of someone who displayed great courage, great fortitude in the face of extreme adversity than Jesus Christ. And I think about the fact that he was in that garden that Thursday night, and he knew what was coming the next day, right? He knew he was going to be falsely accused. He knew that he was going to be falsely arrested. He knew that he was going to be mocked. He knew they were going to spit him in the face. They blindfolded him and hit him and asked him who did it. They beat him, and ultimately they crucified him. They put him up on a cross with two thieves, one on the left and one on the right. And I think the hardest thing for him, and he knew all this was going to happen the night before, was that his father was going to turn his back on him. His father was going to turn his back on him for that short period of time, that 3-hour period of time where he bore the sins of the whole world, that weight on his shoulders. And I sometimes think about that, and I think, okay, so he knew what was coming the next day, but he's God. So he's, maybe you guys don't do this, but he was God. So if I'm God, I can deal with anything. I can overcome anything. And I think, what is clear from the scripture is that night in the garden, that he was sweating blood. He was sweating blood. And there are documented cases where acute fear has actually caused this. So he was God, yeah, but he had the same emotions that we do. He was scared. He was scared about what was going to happen the next day. And yet, what did he do? He faced that fear. He faced that adversity. And he said, in Matthew, it says, "My Father, if it can be possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but your will be done." And he got down on his knees, and was humble and just said, "Father, take this cup from me." And yet he knew that he had to do it. And the next day he faced it all. So I think, being a man of courage, overcoming great adversity, we have no greater example than Jesus Christ. Let's pray. Father, I thank you for this day. I thank you for our time together this Friday morning as men. I just thank you that we can be together as a group. Father, I just pray that we would go into our day today and our weekends, that no matter what comes our way, the little things, the big things, no matter what comes our way, that we would be men of courage, that we would be men of integrity, that we would be men that overcome our fears. Father, I just pray that you help us to deal with our fears. We know that your spirit is not a spirit of fear, but it's a spirit of love. It's a spirit of courage. It's a spirit of self-control. Father, I just pray that you do that good work in us. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.